When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the post-wrestling site, AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
We are here to chat Grand Slam Mexico. But before we do that, let's talk about the show that is continually referred to as the Grand Slam of the post-wrestling lineup. That is the Wellness Policy that went down on Tuesday. After listening to this on my subway ride on Tuesday, I was almost left speechless except for three words at the end of this show. And those words directed at you, Wei, I love you.
Oh my God. I was not ready for that. And I don't know if our audience is either, especially if they did not listen to the latest edition of the Wellness Policy. I hope you don't mind if I take some time
out of context is fun too.
Yeah. Wow. Very, very thank you, John. And thank you for listening to it. You texted me a photo of you with our good friend Damian Abraham on your lovely backyard as what I'm assuming you guys were listening live to the Wellness Policy.
Yes, we were dining on iced tea and banana coconut milk that I tried.
Ooh, yeah, iced tea, but that sounds like a great party. As was the Wellness Policy, which is up right now at youtube.com/postwrestling and also in the Post Wrestling Cafe free feed. So we offer free shows occasionally for people who just sign up as free members at the Post Wrestling Cafe. You can sign up completely free. Just go to postwrestlingcafe.com and join. So you can get that right now.
Yes. Also available on the free feed. A lot of great talk coming out of the NWA podcast on Sunday night. I am midway through this show. A lot of great discussion. And Chris Ely bringing the hardware this particular month. He had a lot to get off his chest. So that's a great show to check out. And the final thing I want to mention is that Thursday Book Club is back in session. Neil Flanagan and I getting together. We will be sharing our thoughts on Under the Black Hat, which was the 2020 book that Jim Ross put out. This was his second autobiography that he did with Paul O'Brien, and chatting pretty much covering his entire tenure at WWE, not just as the lead announcer, but as the head of talent relations. And this becomes kind of an insight into the relationship, a very tumultuous one with Vince McMahon. That is one of the dominant themes of the book. Of course, as he was in the process of doing this, of course, the loss of his wife, which is another big topic in this. And at the end, signing with AEW, that's sort of where this book brings you up to, is the advent of AEW and starting with a new company after decades with WWE. So that will be available Thursday for our Double Double and Espresso members at postwrestlingcafe.com. Wei and I will be live Friday after 3 hours of SmackDown, and then Saturday night, they are back, Collision Course in its regular time, with Kate from Montreal and John Cena.
We've missed them at the regular time, for sure. Yeah.
Yes, so they are back. Look forward to that. Tonight, though, we are heading to Mexico City for Grand Slam Mexico.
Es miércoles. Ya sabes lo que eso significa.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
That was not Excalibur, was it?
Yes, it was.
It was.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize it was that much. Show. Wow.
Oh, yeah. So Excalibur welcomes us to Arena Mexico alongside Nigel McGuinness and Tony Schiavone. They state that it was a sellout with 10,000 plus. We didn't get an official number here. What can you say about the Arena Mexico crowd, Way?
Oh, one of the best of the year for Dynamite. Excellent.
This is one of their biggest crowds in forever. And one of the most heated. And this was very different from Worlds Collide. And not just like the presentation of it, but like Worlds Collide, it was like a really fun show to watch. But like you were watching the crowd. And number one, this is in Mexico City. Worlds Collide was in Inglewood, California. But you had a lot of like the WWE style chants, like chanting for tables or this is awesome, even like counting in English. This was a CMLL Lucha crowd that had come to see AEW.
Yeah, yeah. And they seemed very familiar with AEW, at least enough with a lot of talents that like had never even performed in Mexico before. They were certainly...
Dude, Samoa Joe was like Jesus Christ in that main event for these people when they mentioned the fact Joe has never wrestled in Arena Mexico. And there were a lot of people on this show that were checking this one off the list.
Yeah, I thought AEW's promotion, as well as just maybe like just hyping this up as, you know, an AEW Dynamite show in Arena Mexico, did a whole lot just to make both the crowd and the arena itself one of the features of this particular event.
So we have Hangman Page coming out, and one of the things, like this show, there were some angles and focus on All In, but a lot of it was just like there was nothing backstage on this show. This was the most we had in terms of something of a non-wrestling segment on the show, was Hangman coming out and proceeding to cut his entire promo in Spanish. I just want a deep dive into this entire 6 minutes of the preparation that Hangman had to go through.
Yeah, for this. Yeah. Surprise to me, and I think surprise to most of the wrestling world to know that his level of Spanish is at the level that where somebody could cut a pro wrestling promo in Mexico for about like what, 6 minutes, something like that. I don't speak Spanish, and I regret that at this moment, as I'm sure you do, John, that we couldn't give you a proper breakdown of the words that were being said here, but it sounded very comfortable and confident and impressive to me.
I wouldn't know. I would rely on the natives to speak on how he sounded in this, but I was just more so impressed of the fact that he came out here. It's like anytime they're in different like locations where you'll get a line in the native language to go this level, to me it was quite daunting. To me, this would be way more frightening than going out and having to work some wild match with Swerve Strickland to live up to their last match. This would be much more chaotic.
And I just like, I think about maybe like the reluctance of like a WWE for so many years. And maybe this was like, you know, other promotions too. But like for so many years, it felt like the WWE had to have its... Every single person on the roster only speak in English, and that any sort of words or like prolonged like conversation in a different language would alienate the audience. We got a full segment here with a Spanish promo, and I was captivated as a non-Spanish speaker, because I think there's so much being communicated beyond just the words itself. It's the reaction of the audience. And, you had Excalibur here, like, do his best to try to keep up. And this kind of gives me, like, greater appreciation for, like, a Chris Charlton who's able to translate live and pick the right spots to kind of, you know, like, retell the translation. I'm sorry, I couldn't really get much of the translation from this particular promo from Excalibur.
In fairness, like Excalibur really had no, like there were no breaks for him to even like kind of break in, because when he was speaking over top of Hangman, so it was very awkward for him to try. Like Excalibur obviously is decently fluent in Spanish, obviously, so he was able to.
He did his best.
He did his best, but it wasn't really designed for that. It wasn't lost on me either. Like, just again, and if I'm reaching, I'm reaching. But in this sort of climate right now, that here we are watching, like on TBS on US cable, like an uninterrupted Spanish speech here from Hangman Page. Like, I think there was like an undertone to that as well, and more so in the case of Brody King when he would come out here as well. So that was the opening, and essentially his message was, first of all, thank you for having us in your house tonight. And he got the audience chanting at the end, big boos when Moxley's name was mentioned, and said he is not allowed to be in the building during tonight's 10-man main event with the Death Riders, but there's nothing that says I can't be here after the match. So I mean, it was kind of telegraphing a return by Hangman at the end of the night, which is what would occur.
Support for this podcast comes from NordVPN. By now, a lot of our listeners already know about the benefits of a VPN for their wrestling consumption, helping them access cheaper prices for pay-per-views or ad-free programming through international versions of popular streaming services. But the most important benefit of a VPN continues to be its ability to help you shield your browsing. Using a trusted VPN like NordVPN adds an extra layer of protection from prying eyes, preventing your sensitive data from being sold or shared with third parties that may put you at risk of unwanted solicitations or even fraud. You know the link by now, nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Sign up for a 2-year plan for just a few dollars per month and get 4 bonus months through our exclusive offer. nordvpn.com/postwrestling. As always, you can try it with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Stay safe and enjoy all the benefits of a secure internet with Nord.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
It's June on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We are going through tons of your questions on the Ask Away Mailbag Show, and we're bringing you not one, but two editions of Rewind Away, including a review of the Katsuyori Shibata documentary, California Dreamin', covering his time as head trainer at the LA Dojo. Plus, Karen and Bruce have you covered for New Japan Dominion. Chris from LA has chosen another musical edition of Rewind Away to join Wei Ting and Nate Milton. Plus, we have extended editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown coming at you every single week, along with all of your weekly favorites. It's postwrestlingcafe.com. Our first match. So we were supposed to have a 12-man tag, but Dax Harwood comes out with Stokely Hathaway. Cash Wheeler cannot make it tonight. Now, conventional thinking would mean, okay, instead of a 12-man tag, it will now be a 10-man tag because one is not there. No, we're not only going to replace Cash, we're going to add two more. So now we will do a 14-man tag on a show that also has a 10-man tag. So we got, first of all, Stokely mentioning he has worked on this all day and says, grassy ass. And
which is perfect coming off of the Hangman.
It was pretty great. I laughed out loud at this. So on one end, we have Dax Harwood, Volador Jr., Konosuke Takeshita, Hechi Sero, Kyle Fletcher, Josh Alexander, and Lance Archer. That's one team against Bandido, Adam Cole, Atlantis, who was not originally announced for this, despite doing the angle last week. He was called in. We need Atlantis.
That could have been the reason why they decided to turn this into a 14-man tag instead of a 12. Maybe they didn't know necessarily the status of Atlantis, but he was a glaring person that was missing after being so involved in the angle last week.
And ended up being like the central figure for the ending to this match as well. So yes, 62-year-old Atlantis here, accompanied by Atlantis Jr., who was maybe the biggest heel in this entire match. The crowd hated him
on the face side. Yeah,
Brody King comes out with an Abolish Ice shirt. This man was, I think, everyone's hero on this show. Good for Brody King. Templario and Daniel Garcia. So, man, this was insane. This amount of people. As the match begins, no Don Callis for this match, although he would be on the show later during Okada's match. And they bring up Bandido headlining at Arena Mexico last night. And he beat Máscara Dorada in the main event of Tuesday night show. And this was an interesting point that came out of Tuesday's show, was Bandido got on the microphone and said something to the effect of, like, he would push for Tony Khan to bring Máscara Dorada to AEW. And the crowd did not want to hear this. It was like, this is our guy. And this is like one of our future, like already like a big star, but really designed to be like the future of this company. And this was very interesting, of just like a pushback of looking potentially at like the New Japan template, where it's been, you know, you will have some of these dual contracts and such, but it's like, we want this company to be partners, but we don't want to just be the feeding frenzy for the bigger American company.
Oh man, I think this is something we should definitely start recognizing when we're talking about this current battle for Mexico that's taken place between WWE and AEW. And I think we're already seeing it in the most recent Triple Mania Radio show, where at this point, like, Vikingo is getting booed in front of the audience because he's being seen by the Mexican crowd as a corporate pick. And to all of our surprises, Del Rio is still portrayed as the babyface, because he is somebody who was involved in a year-long storyline that was suddenly cut short because of Big Brother, you know, big corporate America coming in and swooping in and taking over and ruining our wrestling. I completely understand that sort of feeling. I completely understand why, you know, a Mexican audience may feel threatened that their wrestling is being taken over by Americans.
It's going to be a very interesting needle to thread for all of this, and like what these two promotions, how they look a year from now. I mean, they could be like, I think everyone assumes that, you know, AAA is going to be, you know, it is going to go through many, many changes over this next year, especially if that elusive TV deal is landed. And what is going to be the response of a CMLL and this continued partnership as well. But I found that to be really interesting from Tuesday's show. So, I mean, the crowd was super hot here. Hetchy Sarrow was in, and the crowd was just loving everything he was doing. There was a Sasuke special by Templario onto Volador, and Tony Schiavone notes how hard this particular ring is. They were feeling this ring earlier in the day, and dude, this ring, it looked like it had no give to it. Like, there was no bounce to any of this. So I took Tony Schiavone at his word that this thing looked like concrete that they were bumping on throughout the night. Templario lifts up Josh.
By the way, these were Lucha tag rules, so no tags required.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That was a kind of a
consistent. It was only for this match. Or the main event didn't have that.
Yeah, the main event, they were just kind of making up their own rules as they went when it was convenient. So Templario and Bandido both go to lift their opponents for fall-away slam moonsaults. Templario's got Josh Alexander, Bandido has Takeshita, and they go for these like stereo fall-away slam moonsaults. Dude, Templario just rotated enough, and this was like a nasty landing for him, and they even called attention to this.
Scary. Oh. So I trust that you did you slow it down to make sure he landed fine?
It looked like he got turned enough that it wasn't like that Chad Gable fall that he had a few weeks ago on television, where I seriously thought the guy broke his neck. This one, it seemed that whether it was Josh like directing him more or just tightening up or something, it looked like he escaped death here and did continue throughout the match, and even came out later in the show too. So
there were three instances on the show where you could hear audibly, it was either Nigel or Tony on commentary, hold themselves back from saying, "Oh shit."
Yeah.
Because of somebody doing something completely catastrophic and either landing on their head or landing on their legs very dangerously. So, yeah, there were several.
There were a few scary spots on the show. God. Atlantis Jr. comes back. He's just playing heel here. I mean, he's not even trying to fight it. It was pretty great here. And hits his running cross body into the ring.
So like the negative so the announcers are trying to like prep us and by telling us that, okay, this is interesting. Atlantis is a well-respected veteran, but also his son Atlantis Jr. not so well-respected by this crowd, because I guess is he a Rudo typically? Like
it's like he is like the son of Atlantis. Like this is not like a wild like reaction that you would expect for him. But
so they're both supposed to be heels.
No, Atlantis. No. Atlantis right. is like your legendary figure.
That's what I mean. So anyway, regardless, they were trying to prep us by telling us, oh, okay, Atlantis Jr., the audience might boo him, but they're going to cheer his dad. They kind of started booing his dad as well. Well, like it spread to Atlantis Sr., this negative reaction as well.
Well, he caught some of the debris here. The whole match culminates with Atlantis and Dax in the ring together, trading strikes. Dax looked like he was the happiest man on earth here as the crowd is just furious at him. And then he's caught with a small package by Atlantis, who gets the pin in 15 minutes and 47 seconds.
And the crowd boos. And the crowd boos this, okay? Yeah. Again, because at this point, they decided, okay, like, we're booing everything Atlantis. We don't care if they're on the babyface side of the team. We don't know if we don't care that you know, it's the current generation, and it's also this legendary wrestler. We're booing everything involving them, and we are therefore cheering whatever their opponents are that are attacking him. So Dax afterwards is attacking this old man, and the crowd is cheering Dax. It's great. I love this crowd.
I really enjoyed this opener. To me, it was a lot of fun. Like 14 people is probably way too much for one particular match, but
Didn't mind it, man. Like it had this like incredible party atmosphere, and as this sort of like introduction to just the atmosphere of Arena Mexico, I thought it totally worked.
The atmosphere was everything here. Like the crowd, like just made this, and this was a show where like there were matches here where the audience was going to be so hot for it that it was like they could just get away doing like the most basic of stuff. And it was going to,
as we will discuss in Mystico and MJF.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
but as far as like, man, like part of the fun really when it comes to these sort of crowds is just like watching people come in and to see how this crowd would react. And therefore it's not like Atlantis Jr. did like the most impressive things on this match, but anytime they came in, I was captivated just to hear like the reactions from this audience. Also great reactions for Bandido. Brody King, I thought, came across incredibly well.
Oh, he hit that insane tope suicida at one point. Yeah, like really
barking,
it was just
they're barking for him. Like this was an AEW audience, you know?
They were definitely like it felt to me like it was a CMLL audience that, yes, was very much up on who these people were. It wasn't like these were just names that they've heard of, like obviously like they are following like this product, and they were seen as big stars. Kazuchika Okada and Mark Briscoe was next, non-title, and they showed the video of Briscoe issuing the challenge, because we got the use out of the ROH footage that we teamed with Omega once, so I'm fighting for him. This is where Callis is out on commentary, and they do go back and explain Okada's roots in Mexico coming up under Ultimo Dragon, before he would venture out to Chikara and UWA Hardcore.
We will never let that up. Any instance we could mention.
I mean, those are his early years. It's like it's Tori, it's the Tori Yuman gym, and then it's Chikara and UWA Hardcore. That's the first like 3 years of Kazuchika Okada. Mm-hmm. So it was a match that it certainly did not have the heat of the first match, although they did react pretty big to Okada coming out, and Okada hits the big drop kick, and Okada's in control for a long period of time, working the neck, hits the elbow off the top, and then goes to deliver the middle finger, which Briscoe goes to bite, but of course his front teeth are gone, so he moves the finger to the molars.
You know, it's a layered sequence.
Yes. One. This was a little too close to home for me today, because one of my children had an extremely nasty fall and nearly lost her tooth today. And it was...
Oh, you're kidding. Mine too.
Really, no way. Really?
Yeah. I came to pick Oscar up, and he had an ice pack on. They said that he's been very clumsy lately. He's been having these sort of like trips. He's just like, I think, learning to run. He's not doing a very good job of it. But
yeah,
wow,
this was not good today. There was
a lot of blood.
Yeah,
oh, no.
I nearly had to take her to the hospital.
And wait, did you witness the fall?
No, she was getting brought home, and as she was getting out of her stroller, tripped and hit like a pot on the floor. How she didn't lose a tooth is remarkable. It was not good today. So anyway, that's my unfortunate detour from this tooth spot. But she seems to be doing better, but it is painful. Okay. Back to this match. Okada hits a belly-to-back neck breaker. Briscoe then, he bites the finger and hits the froggy bow. There's multiple attempts at the J-driller, which Okada continues to stop. There's a Rainmaker ducked, and then after a tombstone, Okada connects with the Rainmaker. Clean win, and then the post-match beatdown. No one here coming to Mark Briscoe's aid. It was just putting all the heat on Okada 1 week after the Omega destruction. So, listen, Okada's in the big match at All In, and Briscoe was the sacrificial lamb this week.
I wouldn't even call him that, John. Like, his role, his employment is pretty much like determined by his ability to just take these pins. I don't know if there's any sort of like...
He stands up for all the guys that he tagged with at, the Frontier Fieldhouse back in the day. And
I guess there's just not much to sacrifice with Mark Briscoe because his role is to take these sort of victories, right? Or at least losses. I don't know what it is, but I actually quite enjoyed this match. I'm usually somebody who's quite vocal about like Okada matches, but I thought like this had a good amount of length to it. And therefore, I thought it kind of got into the sort of peaks and valleys that you'd want out of an Okada match. I also thought the atmosphere, like in a crowd that treated Okada like a superstar, really helped this as well. And Mark Briscoe is just such a good babyface. You put him in any sort of scenario, and he's going to make it work. He's just so incredibly likable, so entertaining, so charismatic that, like, in any sort of situation, including one like this, you just can't help but like want to cheer for him and actively root against the other guy.
Listen, I thought it was a good match, like overall, and to me, it like served the purpose it needed to. I'd be curious of those that, you know, when this show was first announced, for whatever reason, it felt like Kenny Omega seemed to be the one everyone wanted to see here, and doing this post-match attack, I wonder how many people thought we're going to get a Kenny Omega run in. But after last week's angle, he probably should be selling it for at least a week.
He totally should, yeah. But I also, I mean, he's on like a lot of early promotion for it. And of course, it's always card subject to change, but you know, I'm sure there was some disappointment.
He was an omission that I think that was one of the names that people were hoping to see.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
But they were going to get Mystico with MJF. And... out comes MJF. He is the all-American asshole, accompanied by the Hurt Syndicate. He's in his Apollo Creed best here, coming out with the American flag, his American singlet.
Now he's got a version that is in the style of the MVP.
Yes.
A full bodysuit. Yeah. Great.
I thought MJF was, from the second he walked out, till the minute that they cut away from the end of this post-match, I thought this guy was tremendous. I thought this was one of his finest just performances. Agreed. Overall.
Totally.
He comes out, this, like, it was a good entrance. Then Mystico walks out.
My God.
I'm adding entrance of the year to our year-end awards, okay? Because I think that's a good category, entrance of the year.
I think we have that, or at least we had it. I'm pretty sure that's actually one of our categories.
Well, we need to, Davey, write this down. We're adding this for December because this is on the short list. He comes out, the whole crowd is singing his song. I don't know what it was. This to me was so much better than any of these other like when Copeland comes out or Cody Rhodes comes out and the music ends and they keep singing. This was that times 10. I thought this was just amazing, this entrance.
This song is called, I did a bit of research, Sean, all right? Me Miro by La Quinta Estación. Although this could have been the Natalia Jimenez version.
Could you imagine Def Rubble getting their hands on this guy?
On, like, this song? Mystico, you mean?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, he does have a WWE theme, you know. It was a Mystico, sorry, it was a Def Rebel, but I mean, they did do that. Yeah, no, I was not prepared for this because, like, I'm not a CMLL viewer. I hadn't seen him ever, like, enter to this. The only thing I've ever heard him enter to was whatever, like, AEW thing that they gave him, and it was really nothing memorable. This was remarkable. This felt like, you know, like their Casanina Ray, and just like the vibe of the song just like felt so grand and just like sentimental, you know, something that you would not expect for a professional wrestling event. And it completely worked and just made this atmosphere like amplify that much more. It was awesome. So
yeah,
awesome.
I mean, going in, I thought this was going to headline the show. Like, I thought this was going to be the big match on the show. Given the way it ended, I could see them. They didn't want to end on this note, but man, this this crowd was amazing for this match. And I would imagine that if you were to ask MJF, like, what has been one of the highlights of your career? Like, granted, he's headlined Arena Mexico before, and it was like a similar atmosphere. So it's not like this is a total departure, but I imagine he just had to be. Like, this guy was completely in his element and just seemed to be just soaking this in. He was an amazing heel for this entire duration, and he was against the most loved figure on this whole show by leaps and bounds.
Yeah, I almost get the sense this is, like, maybe the closest you can get to time travel to, like, perhaps, like, the era of wrestling that he probably wants to time travel to the most. You know, like, this was the type of audience that was reacting to something that I think is, like, what we got to see in this match was, I think, completely textbook and completely universal for professional wrestling. He, you know, he's a student of the game, so of course he would just tap into it incredibly well.
And this was a really simple, and I don't say that in a disparaging way, it was a simple match that got maximum reaction. And that is an art of pro wrestling to be able to generate that. And it totally worked. I love this match.
Simple. Anybody can do simple, but not many people can do simple really, really well. Okay. Like, and you know, like any of us can put a steak on a fryer, but to cook a steak perfectly requires a lot of skill.
Well, they were cooking here. As we get MJF hitting him with a powerbomb backbreaker, and then he goes to rip the mask, and they've got Shelton getting involved behind the ref's back, Lashley getting involved behind the ref's back. I thought for sure they were just building up to the big ejection spot, but that never came with the Hurt Syndicate. But it's essentially Mystico is fighting four men instead of one. And Mystico would finally land this handspring back elbow and hits a high cross to the floor. Back in the ring, MJF stops Mystico in his tracks by spitting at him. Shivani doesn't understand what the big deal is. It's like he's got a mask on, and they're like, well, it's blinding him. So anyway, after this is explained to Tony, Mystico fires back with a Canadian destroyer, and MJF goes to leave. Mystico runs up the ramp and goes for La Mystica, and it's countered with a tombstone, and we get this most dramatic count-out tease when Mystico rises up from the dead a la The Undertaker and breaks the count coming back. I was just like, this match is incredible. MJF, meanwhile, while Mystico is still down, but like MJF just wants to count out victory, and then Mystico comes back to break it. We get a one-man Spanish fly from Mystico, and he goes for La Mystica, connects with it, has the armbar applied when MVP distracts the referee. MJF gets out and he low blows Mystico, and Mystico kicks out for this gigantic pop. And MJF, he just gives up at this point and punts him right in the balls for the blatant DQ at 16 minutes and 49 seconds. So this prompts the Hurt Syndicate to attack Mystico. MJF signals that he's going to unmask Mystico. and he rips the mask off, and this crowd is, I thought someone was going to like jump the rail and attack this guy. And he puts the mask on. When Bandido, Templario, and Teton come out, they're on the stage, and this is a distraction as Speedball and Kevin Knight appear on the turnbuckles, drop-kicking the Hurt Syndicate, and they will not shoot Mystico on camera until they have secured a mask for him to put on. By the end of this, I thought if they were ever to do mask versus hair between these two, Ooh. It would be the biggest thing in the world. I cannot fathom either one of them losing either, including MJF's hair. Maybe I'm underestimating.
We don't know what sort of roles he might have lined up that might require, you know.
Well, there's that. It's like, didn't this guy like legit get like a hair transplant? Like, it seems to me like
That's the rumor. I can't say that. Well, and they've insulted him on TV for it as well.
Okay. Well, maybe or maybe not. But
well, he could shave his hair.
All I'm saying, if they did that at like the anniversary show in September or just an Arena Mexico show, period.
Yeah.
I think that thing would be just gigantic if they did it off of this.
Oh my God, would it? The thing is, I can't really see that, like a match like that happening outside of an AEW, like at this point.
I think it has to be at Arena Mexico.
Oh, I completely agree. But I also think now that you've built this up on an AEW show, I think they're going to want to benefit from it too. And for me, I almost feel like a Forbidden Door would be like the right type of show.
We get this in, yeah.
But it doesn't make sense to have it in England. You know, like it's way bigger than Mexico. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe you could be right.
It's like if they put this at the anniversary show, I just think it would be amazing if they did it. Like the American heel. And
it would be, of course it would be. Boy, was this great.
I love this. This was my favorite thing on the whole show was this match and this crowd. I thought the post-match angle was just amazing. It was just like, obviously, like you could follow up with something so big after this. And I think as well is it appears like Knight and Speedball probably getting the match at All In for the tag titles.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, this is my favorite thing on the show too, my match of the night. From entrance to end, it was just so much fun to watch. And it wasn't like necessarily high on Flash, but it was just off the charts in terms of atmosphere and just crowd reaction and the great professional wrestling we got to see from both of these men, but predominantly MJF, who I thought gave one of his best performances in years. And I think for me, like, really stands out in his career from what I have seen of it, because of the setting. He's somebody who just completely understood this audience, completely understood the setting, and knew how well playing this classic heel would work here. Everything they did in this match involving, you know, him and the Hurt Syndicate was just completely textbook, and it just worked so well. It laid a great foundation for Mystico to look like the hero that this crowd wanted. I've seen Sin Cara. I've seen like the occasional Mystico sort of guest spot here and there. Like you always hear like from people, oh, Mystico, he's such a big, you know, big name. Like he's such a difference maker, like in all of these sort of like California towns and all that. And I guess I never really fully comprehended it until I saw Mystico in Arena Mexico in this particular match. This was the showcase that I think a North American fan, you know, should have to completely understand what the big deal is about Mystico.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, this guy is one of the, like this generation's like great, you know, attractions, performers. And this was, yeah, I thought this was excellent. Like when you...
So great.
Like when you build to like that big like mask stipulation at one of the like anniversary cards, to me, it's like there's no better atmosphere in pro wrestling than when you get to that fever pitch with like masks on the line or hair on the line at one of the big Arena Mexico shows. And I think like this was like the closest to like approximating something like that. And I just think like the limit of what you could do with this, I think is.
So we have a couple people here in the chat suggesting All In for a potential mask versus hair. Do you think that would be a suitable stage?
I mean, it's Texas, and you would be drawing certainly with like a Hispanic audience. I think like it'd be an interesting one to put it there. Like,
because I don't think they're doing this angle to push that far into the future, it's so far into the distance, right? It's got to be for something coming up.
Yeah, it very well it could be. there.
I think that sounds great.
Yeah. My preference would still be Arena Mexico, but I mean, for AEW's purposes, like that would be, like that's a stipulation like people will genuinely care about. The idea that MJF would like lose his hair, I think, would be like a big, a big deal to people.
Yeah, I think he's willing to do a haircut. Come on, like he'll grow it back.
Well, then we had 4 million pesos on the line. I think MJF would want a lot more than 4 million pesos to shave his head. That'd be my guess. Ricochet, Hologram, Leo Rush, and Máscara Dorada. So, I mean, I thought like this was like a really great presentation of like Máscara Dorada, who they tried to put a lot of big emphasis on. It was also, I thought, like Leo Rush towards the end when he did that succession of Poison Ranas. It's like this guy is so talented, and I think he often just gets lost in the shuffle in AEW, but he got a chance to like I thought he was like the big standout towards like the back half of this match as well. Like Ricochet played, you know, his Ricochet role in this match, and obviously Hologram was the one going over at the end. But it was interesting. The first half of this, they almost worked it like a tag with Ricochet and Leo Rush working together against Dorada and Hologram before we got the predictable falling out between Leo Rush and Ricochet. Excalibur, even one of his underappreciated lines on the whole show was, "Want to send out my best wishes to Taz," and he just lets it sit. There's nothing wrong with him. I just want to send my best wishes out to him. I don't know why I enjoyed that so much, but I did. He also gave us the conversion of $211,000 here to put it into a perspective.
He must have seen your post.
He saw my headline. That's it. So at the end here, I mean, we just got dives galore in this whole thing. Hologram hit a... He went for a dive through the ropes and right into the guardrail, connecting with Leo Rush. There was a crucifix bomb by Dorada onto Hologram, and this is when Leo hits one Poison Rana to Ricochet, then one to Hologram, and then he does this great sequence where Dorada is avoiding it, ending with Leo leapfrogging out of the corner into the third of three Poison Ranas. Then goes for the final hour to Dorada. It's broken up by Ricochet, and Ricochet ends up crotched on the top turnbuckle as Hologram blocks Leo's rebound stunner and delivers the portal bomb, pinning Leo Rush in 15 minutes and 47 seconds. And unfortunately, that was kind of Leo's role in this match. But man, he looked really good in this, and this was entertaining for like what you would expect going into this, and I thought especially for like a Máscara Dorada to be on like U.S. television getting like a near 16 minute match as well. Was
I can't wait to steal him from Mexico.
Is the graphic already out? No.
Another just outstanding match on the show as a showcase of like some of the world's greatest high flyers, you know. Great matchmaking, putting like two of your elite level high flyers who happen to be heels here against two luchadors, one of which I guess is your luchador, but the other is clearly beloved by this crowd. So I thought there was some masterful heel work here from Ricochet and Rush. I thought they were great together, great at rallying up the crowd. But the in-ring just, I thought, really delivered with the combination of these four in speed, creativity, and execution.
It's June on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We are going through tons of your questions on the Ask Away Mailbag Show, and we're bringing you not one, but two editions of Rewind Away, including a review of the Katsuyori Shibata documentary, California Dreamin', covering his time as head trainer at the LA Dojo. Plus, Karen and Bruce have you covered for New Japan Dominion. Chris from LA has chosen another musical edition of Rewind Away to join Wei Ting and Nate Milton. Plus, we have extended editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown coming at you every single week, along with all of your weekly favorites. It's postwrestlingcafe.com. Zeuxis versus Mercedes Moné was next for the CML women's title, a rematch from a Dynamite from a year ago. From Des Moines, Iowa to Arena, Mexico, could we have more of a distinction between these two matches?
No, I'm sure there's some things in common.
There was a Tope Suicida by Zeuxis, and she crashes into the mat coming down. This looked particularly frightening. Was this on your list?
Yeah, this was one of the, oh, shit. Oh, shh. Tony or Nigel, one of the
yes.
two.
all these people, they got up, they continued. Mene just hits her with the running knees into the barricade. And then as Mene is posing on the edge of the apron, Zeuxis is laying on the middle turnbuckle and hits a snapped suplex onto the edge of the apron, follows with a Liger bomb, and then one woman, Spanish Fly, gets a near fall. Mene comes back with the backstabber into the statement maker, but Zeuxis gets up to her feet, hits La Santa Maria for a two count, and then it's Mene with a moonsault counter to a scoop slam off the middle turnbuckle as Mene pins Zeuxis in 9 minutes and 20 seconds, getting her latest championship belt, which I think was the outcome most expected going into this, and will ensure Mercedes can add Mexico City to her stopovers over the next couple of months.
Yeah, she's got
to go back to Austria. She's got to go to Mexico City. She's got to go to England.
If UWA was still in operation, I'm sure she'd be going to Mississauga at some point as well.
She's never worked St. John's Hall. That is correct.
She has not. She's now six belt Monet. Is that it? One, two, three, four. Wait, is it five?
It could be
five. Sure. Five, whatever. I'm sure she'll have added another by the time we're done the podcast. I thought these two worked hard, but I mean, I think when we're talking about the body of the entire show, this was certainly a notch below the others on the card, especially in terms of, I thought, reaction from the crowd. This was not necessarily a crowd that looked at. I think so much of the success of the matches on the show was contingent on the audience's love of like a particular luchador that like they might see as a regular or just maybe somebody that they see as like a big star. And Zeuxis just didn't really have, to me, anywhere near the level of connection to this crowd that I thought most of the other homegrown talents did. Monet was a big star, like came across like a big star, but that didn't feel like it was enough to me.
Yeah, I thought the match itself was I liked the match, but like it wasn't one where I felt like the audience was not necessarily, you know, as heated as, you know, what we had followed behind it. But they were into Timeless Toni Storm, because this black and white like film noir style video airs of Timeless Toni Storm on the streets of Mexico, which did not seem like something that they just threw together in a day or two. This spent a lot of time on this video. This was like a Hollywood trailer that they designed for Toni Storm.
These are always, I mean, AEW does a great job with many of their videos, but I mean, in particular, like these with Toni Storm,
This was so well done. This could have been like the setup for her entrance at All In.
Totally.
This almost seemed like it was like we're just using this here for Grand Slam, and it was really, really well done.
Well,
wait
till you see All In, then, you know, because I would hope that they feel confident in topping themselves. But I wish I had like a better understanding of like film history, because this, I feel like I, you know, if I was a kid from Montreal, I'd probably be able to tell you exactly what this was referencing, but, it was pretty damn cool.
Well, it sets up Mina Shirakawa appearing on the stage, distracting Mercedes, as Carmen Sandiego appears behind Toni Storm, behind Mercedes in the ring.
Is this, I mean, it could be a Carmen Sandiego reference. Could it just simply be that like, red turns into like a really nice shade of like black in a black and white film?
Let's assume, because they were in a different country, it was Carmen Sandiego.
Okay, so, sure.
You didn't know that this was a reference?
Stop. Yeah, okay.
And yes, we get a big brawl between them after Toni hits a German suplex and then goes for the Storm Zero on the ramp, but the officials stop, and Toni proclaims, "Let the games begin." It's like we got 3.5 weeks until the games culminate at the match. So the games have now begun.
They have, yes. Mm-hmm.
And that takes us to our main event.
What was better, this or the Blake Monroe segment?
Oh, this was better than the Blake Monroe segment.
Yeah,
with
I agree.
Due respect to the table being broken. A non-Slim Jim table to an NXT. The main event is the Death Riders and Young Bucks taking on Swerve Strickland, Will Ospreay, and the Ops. Ospreay's head is bandaged. He is selling the effects of the thumbtacks from the Bucks last week, and noting that you can buy Swerve sneakers that do not come with thumbtacks. And it's all Ospreay at the start as they're going after his black eye, wearing down that eye. And the crowd goes wild when Joe is tagged in. Like, it is a sustained roar for this man. Tony Schiavone just sits back and marvels. What a pro wrestler this Samoa Joe is. What a pro wrestler. I mean, my goodness, if that could be on everyone's gravestone, they'd consider themselves a successful pro wrestler. All 10 enter the ring. We get a brawl. Ospreay hits the Sky Twister press to the floor. And then we get the heat on Ospreay yet again. Hobbs is in with Yuta. Hobbs has to overcome a 4-on-1 disadvantage. And then Beast Mortos comes in and spears Hobbs and proceeds to hit a tornillo through the ropes to the floor. And then we got Joe and Mortos, a pairing I've never thought of and now cannot wait to see them reunite on a random edition of Collision. Ospreay comes in, eats super kicks, stops the EVP trigger, and goes up for a double Os Cutter to Matt and Nick. Swerve hits a Fosbury to the Bucks, and then it's Yuta in with the Busaiku knee, one to Will that looked like it totally missed him. Shibata responds with a PK, and then Moxley and Swerve are tagged in. And Ospreay and Swerve start double teaming when Shafir distracts. Matt sends Swerve off the top, and he drops throat first onto the top rope, leaving him to get schoolboyed by Moxley, who grabs the tights and pins Swerve in 16 minutes and 13 seconds. This is almost exactly like the ending about 2 months ago when it was, I think it was Nick Jackson that pinned Swerve in that tag as well. So Swerve losing here. Yeah. And
I was surprised by that. Were you?
Yeah, I think no one was expecting that Swerve would eat the fall here. Afterwards, we continued with an attack when Hangman Page appears and stares down Moxley, and they get into it. The buckshot is attempted by Hangman, who misses Moxley and hits Matt by mistake. And Moxley grabs the briefcase, but he is stood down by the babyfaces, and they retreat to the back. Page is having this awkward interaction with the Bucks. They don't know if they're friends, if they're not friends. And then Page returns to the ring, standing with the babyfaces to conclude the show.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I thought it was a very good multi-person match. Again, most notable for me to see like how this arena would react to several of the members of these particular teams. And I felt like Ospreay actually might have gotten the biggest reaction to my ear. But following that was Joe, who I think maybe is also impressive considering he's not necessarily booked to be like that high on the card these days. But this was really strong action. And I don't know if, like, I understand why it was the main event, because it was, like, you know, your AEW sort of, like, you know, top guys, and it's your A story. But I didn't think this was the most fun match on the show. That, to me, was the opener, you know. My favorite match on the show was MJF versus Mystico. And I probably ranked this, like, maybe even, like, third or I probably rank it third on this particular evening. But it, man, overall, this was like a really enjoyable show. And yeah, the 2.5 hours, honestly, I thought were like a really good length. Was a really good length for this particular show. You know, it allowed a lot of the matches to breathe. And this crowd, just like the energy, completely carried through. This might be almost like an ideal length, and I might sort of regret those words, but this might be an ideal length for an AEW show.
Yes, I think for AEW, 4 hours, way too damn long. 2.5 hours was, I thought, perfect for tonight. I wouldn't have wanted to, like, for this show to be 2 hours, you would have to eliminate a match, probably. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad they didn't. I like this format. I think most, like, for a WWE show, like, there are... It didn't seem anyone was too crazy about 3 hour Raws, except for Way for a period of time. But the 2.5 hour version on Netflix, like, it's generally like a fine amount of time. Like, mm-hmm. I don't feel that's like a drain of a length of time that we have just become accustomed to as well. This was such an entertaining show. You know, people are naturally going to compare it to Worlds Collide because it was just so recent and it's like similar initiatives by both companies. They felt so different, and I'm not even stating like necessarily like bad or good, but they totally felt like completely different approaches to doing like Lucha, where this certainly felt like it was entering CMLL's domain and catering a show around that, as opposed to Worlds Collide, where it felt like they were taking the AAA product and putting it in a WWE setting. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that like either is the right or wrong way to do things, but in terms of just if you wanted like being authentic to the promotion itself, like that is what tonight kind of felt like. Like this was just completely analogous to a Friday night Arena Mexico show that I think that audience was, that's who you were drawing from as well tonight.
Both I thought were entertaining shows.
Yeah.
And you're also kind of asking me like with a lot of recency, you know, with this particular one, I might give the edge to this one, but they were both really strong. I mean, for me though, it was part of the draw of seeing this was to see Arena Mexico and to see an Arena Mexico audience. And that's not necessarily something Worlds Collide was able to provide me. Like I didn't necessarily, well, I mean, I can't really say, but this was just tremendously entertaining. And I it's something I hope they do every year.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of this, it was like, this is, like if they made this an annual thing, like this is something I would love to go to. Like that was the feeling at the end of this, like this was, it was just, it really sold like you on the atmosphere.
Well, the way they're building this week, it kind of feels like it's like a mini Mania weekend.
This would have been the week to go. Like if you wanted, like with Tuesday tonight and Friday, they should try and like structure.
Do you like it for a TV show, or do you think that there's potential for it as a pay per view?
I think you could absolutely do an all in Mexico. The question would be if you would want to take all in away from like a stadium. Like they're not going to run a stadium in Mexico, but I don't think the idea of like running like Arena Mexico for an all in is a poor idea at all. I think it'd be actually an excellent idea. So, I certainly feel like coming out of this, like, you know, Grand Slam Australia was one where, you know, the build up, it didn't necessarily like click with everyone, but that show was really well received, and I think this one even more so. Like to me, this like this just felt like Arena Mexico should at least be a once a year stop for AEW.
Yes, I completely agree. Like I would love that. Like this felt like a very strong special attraction show that wasn't just different in name and title, but different in just arena and different in just audience and different in cast. Like it was, I mean, we've seen a lot of the CMLL acts already before, but like seeing them in Arena Mexico in front of an Arena Mexico crowd completely makes them all feel like bigger stars and they're therefore that much bigger of a special attraction. So,
well, speaking on that, I mean, we have talked about, you know, whatever. So Forbidden Door is at the end of August in London, and like it does feel like coming out of this week that they have elevated some of these CMLL attractions to be equal, if not even more,
to modern day New Japan.
Interesting than some of the New Japan pairings at this point, that now you have a whole other style and roster to look upon. And these are all also like new and like fresh, you know, performers to go with. So,
I think you could expect a bigger CMLL presence at Forbidden Door this year.
I think so for sure. Like they really did a great job with this in terms of just exporting CMLL to an American audience that if you are just an AEW viewer, I think you'd come away with this wanting to see more.
Oh my God. CMLL must be ecstatic about something like this because it's just,
outside of charging $35 for their YouTube, they could maybe, you know, cut that down a bit for entry, but I would be really interested to see like if they get any kind of like bump for this Friday show, because you have Ricochet on that show, like you have a bunch of AEW stars on that show coming up Friday. We didn't mention this in the main event, by the way, is that Claudio was replaced by Beast Mortos, and that was a significant deal because Beast Mortos left CMLL in 2011 and had been with AAA up until going to TNA and then to AEW. So like he had kind of been persona non grata and was able to get, this was his first Arena Mexico date in 14 years. So that was significant in the main event as well.
The only member of LFI to be allowed to wrestle on the show? Didn't Jurassic tweet something about...
I didn't see that. I'm not sure.
Having to respect, like... I guess anyway, I don't want to like
there's still those politics that there's some that cannot wrestle for, you know, these types of shows as well. All right, well, there you go. That was our review of Grand Slam Mexico. We're gonna sign off on the YouTube portion, but we are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night live after Raw, after Dynamite, and this Friday after SmackDown. If you want to follow along live and get all of the news of the day, plus our feedback and Q&A portion, sign up, postwrestlingcafe.com. You get a link every single time that we are going live so that you can join us and get all of that. We did about a half hour of news off the top tonight for our XL version of the show, going through all the latest news, including SmackDown, are we counting down the three-hour era of the program, as well as going through many other topics, including NXT from Tuesday night and updates on Ben Askren and Liv Morgan, who it looks like will be going under surgery for her shoulder injury, and Tony Khan going to France, doing an interview, and then hopping on a flight to Mexico as well. We talk about all of that on the news portion. So goodbye on the YouTube channel. And now we are heading to forum.postwrestling.com. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.